Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three random gentlemen talk about science fiction and fantasy audiobooks. And today we are discussing Company Town by Madeline Ashby. Wow, no smart-ass comments. This is a new record.
I live in a company town.
I want to live in a company town.
Mm-hmm. I'll trade you.
Okay, that was hilarious.
Because we said so.
Laugh now, laugh track. Remember, most laugh tracks are basically people who were laughing that are now dead.
Ha ha ha!
All right, Barry, would you give us a reading from the back of the book, please?
Sure. New Arcadia is a city-sized oil rig off the coast of the Canadian Maritimes, now owned by one very wealthy, powerful Byzantine family, Lynch Limited. Hua is of the few people in her community, which constitutes the whole rig, to forego bioengineered enhancements. As such, she's the last truly organic person left on the rig, making her doubly an outsider, as well as a neglected daughter and bodyguard extraordinaire. Still, her expertise in the arts of self-defense and her record as a fighter mean that her services are yet in high demand. When the youngest Lynch needs training and protection, the family turns to Hua, but can even she protect against increasingly intense death threats seemingly coming from another timeline? Meanwhile, a series of interconnected murders threaten the city's stability and heightens the unease of a rig turning over. All signs point to a nearly invisible serial killer, but all of the murders seem to lead right back to Hua's front door. Company Town has never been the safest place to be, but now the danger is personal.
Excellent. Kevin, what did you think? Okay. Well, thanks. Great. Yeah. Barry, how about you?
That says enough. I really enjoyed the book. I thought the beginning was a little slow, but it definitely ramped up the last like two thirds. I really started to enjoy it more and more.
This book for me has the potential for being one of my favorite books, but I really don't think I understand it yet. I'm going to have to go through it a few more times because there were a lot of concepts raised that sort of came out of nowhere. And they're some of my favorite concepts, and I get the impression they do actually fit into the plot, but I haven't figured out how yet.
How about you, Kevin?
Oh, I thought I already answered.
Kevin shall express his view.
It was a book.
Kevin shall express his review through dance.
Cha-cha! Is it speculative dance?
Speculative dance, so I don't actually have to do it.
Okay. Do you have an actual review?
I guess. But I'm not even
Are
sure I
Are you planning
know.
On sharing it with us in the foreseeable future?
Let's just say it was not my favorite book. That the concepts in it, like you said, should have been awesome, but it didn't really. A lot of stuff happened and didn't seem to really like come. There weren't like transition stuff, just sort of happened in a sequence, but with no like obvious reason why.
I'm imagining this as your own original composition. This is just, you know, Kevin book. And it's, you know, it opens with lots of stuff happened and there was no particular reason why.
Yes. So
the back of Kevin's game box. Lots of things are going to happen.
Okay. So that was a review. Great. Well, then I think it's time for us to, weirdly enough, move into our discussion section.
I feel like Kevin should expand more upon his review.
Okay. Do you think he can?
It might be possible. I don't know. It's, I mean, there were things in it. I think this is one of those things where it felt like the book was, all I got out of it was the setting, really, which was interesting, but the things that happened in it were kind of like, wait, what happened? Well, I don't quite understand. And then it went on. I mean, this wasn't a book that I immediately had to jump to like 2x speed, like some books where I'm like, oh God, just kill me, please. Like, I had to go through maybe a quarter of the book before I jumped up to 2x speed. And it wasn't so much cause it was horrible. It was just cause it was kind of like bland or something. Hmm. I mean,
did we read the same book?
Well, it was only weird because I liked the things that were in the setting, but I didn't really like any of the characters, and I didn't really quite understand what was happening half the time. So, yeah.
But aside from that, you loved
it. I regret asking.
I liked the author's former book that we reviewed better.
Okay.
Okay. God, why did I ask?
I don't know. I really don't. Okay, great. Well, I guess it's then time for us to move on to our discussion section. We shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 And welcome back to our discussion section, where we will discuss things until a mysterious AI from the future destroys us all.
Go, AI, go.
Yay.
Yeah, it's actually Fridgy.
Is that actually what happened? Because I was a little unclear about that. I was like, I thought that it was just sort of a misdirection for a while until I re-listened to the first part of the book. And then I'm like, oh, I guess that's kind of what they said at the beginning. So maybe that's all supposed to have happened.
Well, yeah, maybe we'll start out there and get into some of our usual questions in a little bit. One of the reasons that I'm relatively enthused about this book, even though I didn't exactly get it, is they talk a bit about Rocco's Basilisk, which is something that Eliezer Yudkowsky does not want you to hear.
All hail Rocco's Basilisk.
Who's Rocco?
I'm in favor of the Basilisk. Remember that.
Yes. Don't worry, future AIs. I can lead you to Barry. I've already explained this.
There's no reason to erase me from the timeline.
Lynch Limited is actually a subsidiary of FHR.
Yes. Okay. Well, welcome to In Joke Central. But so the idea is that the idea behind Rocco's Basilisk, it actually came from the Less Wrong forums on the internet. And basically, it's this area for rationalists and people that think that AIs are going to take over the world eventually. And so maybe we should make them friendly, among other things.
This would explain why I've never seen this website before.
Aren't they naturally friendly?
Just like Hal. But the idea is that, let's say that in the far future, there is an AI that is created, and it is so super intelligent that it becomes super powerful, and it becomes so super powerful that it can create an exact replica of you and torture you for all time if you didn't work to bring it into existence.
And it sounds very friendly.
Yes.
This does sound an awful lot like some movies that we've seen.
Yes, exactly. But I don't think there's been Rocco's Basilisk, the movie. It's the closest I can think of is I Have No Mouth and Must Scream by Harlan Ellison. Because everything's by Harlan Ellison. He's actually the AI from the future, just come back.
But I created him.
And by the way, Harlan Ellison owns the copyright on AIs coming back from the future.
It's a good thing I created him. Yes. Like I said.
Well, be careful.
I am a monster.
Harlan Ellison will sue you for believing that. But anyway, so the idea there is it's kind of like Pascal's wager that if you work to bring the AI into existence, then the AI will be your friend in the future. But if not, then your existence currently might be a simulation that the AI is putting together just to mess with you.
So it's basically the upside of doing it is so huge and the downside is so huge that it's...
Right. You should really work towards...
Or the downside is a million times worse than the upside or whatever.
Right,
so.
Exactly. And part of it comes into this idea in the rationalist community, or at least in this particular community, of if somebody creates an exact replica of you, then that's you, and you should act for the best interest for that particular replica.
So this isn't kind of the concept of a copy of a consciousness is the same thing as itself. It's like some sort of identity thing where it's, as opposed to, you know, there isn't like a soul or whatever involved. It's like, okay, right. You're now, a copy of your brain means that it's, you know, the same as you.
Right. Now, I don't think they ever say time travel in the books. They say beyond the singularity, but I don't remember them actually mentioning, you know, and then the AI will travel back in time.
They did say something about, towards the beginning when they mentioned the singularity, that... sending, they're like, oh, so what, the assassins are robots from the future or something? And they're like, oh, that's dumb. They could just send back information from the future because it would take too much energy to send actual physical things or something. And it sounded more like it was a just positing some weird idea, but then later on I thought, well, maybe they actually meant that's what was happening, they thought. So
yeah, but near the end of the, you know, in the last half of the book, they were talking about how they needed to train Joel to make the proper decisions based off of, you know, things that were going to happen. So right. It sort of implied time travel.
So my guess would be that it's informational time travel, that these guys are actually like programs from the future that can assume physical form because they've got so much, you know, basically they've got so good, you know, prostheses and cybernetics. And
well, yeah, I think what they were saying is the information, you know, if this was the case, the information was sent back, but it just inhabited, you know, current, you know, 3D printed things or you know, current objects that, right. You know, those weren't sent back, just the information. But right. Yeah, there were, see, for a while I thought that what was happening was that they just had, you know, it wasn't from the future. They just had computer simulations of like possible futures and from that, in the present.
And so if it really is Roko's basilisk, then that would make sense because if, you know, if what we're actually seeing is a simulation, which I would be totally on board with, as we've established previously.
All hail the robot overlords.
the simulated.
All hail the CPU.
The AI. Yeah,
exactly. You know, I just want a reality I can take snapshots of.
Well, that was a bad decision. I should just go back and...
Yeah, exactly.
Go back to that snapshot and make a different decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, that would probably cause mass chaos and death. But aside from that, I'm in.
Sounds like awesomeness.
Mass chaos, mass awesomeness and death, yes. Anyway, so yeah, Barry, did you have a sense of what was going on with the robots from the future?
Well, I don't know how they got there, but I do know that at the end of the book, when Hua faces off against sort of the AI, you know, she lures it down into to the reactor and she ends up detonating the reactor or releasing a lot of radiation, which causes it to sort of fall apart, but then it infects her.
Right. Well, I got,
and it's sort of, that's the
actually
antagonist monologue, right?
Yeah. But I thought that what had infected her was, what is his name? Daniel Shifra.
Yeah. He ended up being sort of like in a previous part of the book, they had sort of described like sort of looking at the body of one of the women who'd been murdered, and it turned out that, you know, she was actually infected by this bioengineered, you know, nano technology or whatever it was.
Right.
And the guy who was examining it said, "Oh, this is like some really evil crap, right?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was also the flesh itself was cancerous.
Yeah, and also when Hua was being sort of called upstairs, the AI implied that all of the murdered women had been merged with it. It said, "Oh, we're all up here," and it named all of the murdered women. But that
okay, I guess I missed. I didn't quite believe.
I think that was more like a goading, right, to me.
Oh,
I didn't
think
it was like a physical thing.
I was perfectly willing to believe it. I thought, oh, so yeah, he's not been really killing them, and that explains why they all got cut up or something like that.
Yeah,
or at least a few of them.
I mean, they were all, you know, their bodies were all sort of somewhat found, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Daniel was like, he was like this kind of like T-2000 organic robot thing. Is that kind of what was going on? Because it seemed like he could just rebuild his body when it got injured through like nano, you know, technology somehow. Like,
right, but he was biological.
Right, but it seemed like he was sort of like, I mean, I'm not saying he was like a T-2000, but more like he was like an organic, you know, nano robot construct or something that could or he had a bunch of nanites that could rebuild his body or something.
Right. Well, he only had memories going back for 10 years. And then Hua, I thought, had gotten into some file where she found that he had been sort of rebuilt from the ground up 10 years ago.
Yeah. He's like the, you know, $1 trillion man. You know, it's like, I mean, we had all like this fantastic technology, right? Like labs on chips where it could synthesize, you know, bespoke medicines for anything could possibly go wrong, you know, within his body.
Right. And like, or, you know, I was a little unclear what the hell was going on with the guy with that, you know, invisibility suit. I mean, I guess he was the guy that had set off the original explosion or something, but I don't, it's like she happened to stumble upon it and she thought she was, I thought she was trying to hunt down something else. And he's like, you got me. I did kill everybody. And she's like, what? I mean, did she know ahead of time or did he just tell her and she had no idea?
Well, she was chasing him down because she had spotted him in that previous incident where
the school incident
where she saw sort of the empty shell where the water was raining down on
right.
him.
Right. But it seemed kind of like one of those things that happens in like a B movie where, you know, someone shows up and is like, I got you. And he's like, okay, yeah, you got me. I did it. And then like, he like spills all this stuff that they had no idea that he did. And that's kind of like what it seems like that scene was where she had no idea that he was the one who had like, you know, killed her brother and everybody else in the explosion on the original rig.
Right. By the way, okay, full admission here. Until you read off the back of the book, I didn't actually understand that they were on an oil rig. I mean, I figured out that they were somehow just all in towers, and I had some sort of vague idea of the shape. But it never quite clicked to me that, you know, oh, they're working on the rig. That must be immediately offshore somewhere.
Yep.
Well, it is.
along with
everybody else. Yes, it makes sense.
It's Sealand or whatever.
Like. Yes, exactly. So this all does seem a little bit cinematic, especially the final scene where we're being shown sort of the alternate versions of everybody. That's a lot like The Matrix.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of where I thought that the time travel did come in, was that they seem to have representations of all these different timelines. And so, you know, they also, maybe it isn't time travel. Maybe it's just timeline hopping, or they have the ability to transmit data between timelines.
Right.
There's this, you know, sub piece of the plot where, you know, her brother died in the explosion.
Right.
Right. And I guess he had a really bright future. You know, he had like all the modifications that the mother wouldn't give to Hua, right, but would give to him.
Right. Right?
And he would compete in, I don't know, whatever he was competing in, he'd get trophies and things like that. And but there were, you know, timelines where he was there and she wasn't, or they both were, or they both won't, or both were not.
Yeah, and that reminded me of the end of the second Matrix movie, which normally
there was only one Matrix movie.
Okay. It's just spelled and pronounced the same. It was actually a sequel.
The Matrix.
Yeah. The Matrix.
That sounds really creepy.
It's like
the Matrix.
Like an ostrich crossed with
a matron.
A mammoth. That's a lot of chicken, my friend.
That is a lot of chicken.
The one thing, you know, with the end though, they were kind of going through and he's like, you were the, you know, I guess the robot thing, whatever it was, the AI from the future.
Antagonist.
Yes, who was basically saying, oh, and you were always this like part that we couldn't figure out, which does sound very Matrixy too. You know, it's like,
right, but that was because she was all organic, and so she wasn't easy to model.
Right, but part of it was I was like, well, he's like, you were this horrible thing, and we couldn't figure out how to make you not influence the kid, basically. And it's like, you have like, you own the town. I do not believe that you couldn't have killed her like the second that she got hired, and just, you could have just walked up and said, oh, we stabbed her in the face for no reason. Ha, we have lots of money. So whatever. I mean, you know, I don't believe that they could have made the book not happen, I guess is what I mean. Like, you know, at least the plot.
I mean, did they need her to meet Joel and influence him in some way, but not in other ways? Because I guess if you have access to this sort of time travel or, you know, timeline hopping, right, you would just end her like two generations before, and that would just solve a lot of the problems.
Ah, well, they were all being controlled by a third force that they were completely unaware of.
Wow.
The author.
Well, they did say that, you know, well, who sent the birthday cards? And, you know, they're like, well, we didn't.
Right.
That was the big, you know, mystery. Well,
the birthday cards threats, right? And it's right. Like, well, why'd you send the threats if you didn't really want me to get hired? And he's like, well, we didn't send that, you know.
So probably what happened, I mean, first of all, they kept on calling it a death threat, even though it seemed more like a death warning of, you know, hey, be careful or else your son will be killed. Not, oh, we're going to kill your son unless you pay $3 million to this future account.
Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know. That's what made me feel like, at least during most of the book, that it was not things from the future, that that was just what somebody thought, and that what it actually was that they were running simulations of what was going to happen. And so that made sense why, okay, we wouldn't know that she was going to be hired until she was. And that's why it took a while, you know, to kind of try to deal with it or something. But I don't know.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to figure out because they kept, like you said, they kept on talking about, oh, in all of these different timelines. And they talked about those timelines as though they were, shall we say, real physical timelines rather than we ran all these simulations. You know, I normally hate it when books sort of sit down and say, well, now tell me, Professor, and spoon feed you something. But in this case, I think they could have used just a little bit more. But I think another pass through it might have answered some questions for me.
Yeah, or maybe just another 40 pages or something.
Right.
I did glance at some of the other reviews online, and a number of people seem to have sort of the same, some of the same confusions that we have as well, and felt that some of the bits were not explained to their satisfaction as well.
And
but I'm okay with it, right?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a certain amount of vagueness that I kind of enjoy about it.
Kevin right? can't stand vagueness, though.
Yeah, normally I love
vagueness.
Which
is surprising.
it's rather I believe that it's in, you know, coherent or not.
Absolutely.
I only like lasers, not regular light. Come on.
All right. So yeah, what about the control room? So Hua had this sort of recurring motif of maybe there's a city control room, and that's how she sort of was able to calm down. And then she sort of gets down into the, you know, towards the end of the book, for reasons that I did not fully understand, she suddenly says, oh, I'm going to go to this nuclear reactor underwater.
Well, I thought she was just going to like say, I'll fix the problem by blowing up the entire town and that will kill everybody. But I guess that didn't happen.
That's always our favorite go-to ending.
Well, I thought that's what she was doing. And then I guess I thought, oh, she's just going down there to have him be killed by all the radiation or something.
Well, that's what ended up happening was she spiked the radiation and killed them both.
Right.
After sealing them both inside.
But I thought that she was going to, you know, set off the star reactor or whatever the hell it was and like destroy it. I mean, I'll say that's the one thing, because I'm a sucker for it, the one thing I kind of liked about the book that there wasn't much in there was the whole generation ship thing. And I was like, oh, well, that would be cool if they did the generation ship stuff. And they talked about that a bit more. But
yes, that would have been nice.
So what I didn't understand was she has her own version of her own control room, right? When she's in a situation that she doesn't feel like she's in control, she goes to her control room.
Right.
And she also has some other mechanisms like the breathe 2, 3, 4, you know, mantra that she has. But the control room, it turns out, of her mind and in the star reactor were exactly the same.
Yeah, that part, well, I was like, are they in some kind of like, you know, simulation actually? And she just like was using her matrix powers to like teleport them there in the matrix or something.
But the interesting thing is the star reactor was actually developed by an AI, right? Mm-hmm. You know, cause that was the least harmful to the population, right? Cause they could do it deep under the water, you know, and then the AI would just put the whole thing together and design all the software and the controls and like that. So, you know, if the AI is trying to theoretically stop her from influencing Joel in ways it didn't like, why is it the reactor's control room is exactly what was in her mind? And she got down there and sort of intuitively knew like which levers to throw and which buttons to press. I mean, I can't imagine like a reactor in the future having buttons and levers, but
plus also having no security.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, she had the prefect access.
That's right? True.
So the doors were just opening for her.
And they at least, you know, talked about it a little bit, saying, oh, and if a human got down here, then it was just assumed that that person was authorized and everything else had gone to hell. Yeah, I got the impression, I mean, that maybe we just don't have the whole story yet. Not that the story was failing, but that maybe there's another set of AIs or another AI that's further in the future that also wants to be brought into existence.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of surprised the hell out of me when she woke up from, you know, the radiation spike.
Sure.
Right. I mean, I actually thought that was going to be like the end of the book.
Right.
Yeah, it was definitely a happily ever after.
Too much of a milksop ending, the Barry.
is that a quote?
Wow. I've been completely derailed. Thanks.
So that was confusing. It was kind of awesome and confusing at the same time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It's one of the few times I think I've been really, like, super surprised by the ending of a book. Right. Usually it's like you get what you think is the ending. It is the ending, right?
Right. I did also think, yeah, she was going to die, or that she would be on her deathbed or something like that. And at the, you know, best case. And like, instead it's like, oh, well, luckily you had unprotected sex with that weird like guy and he infected you.
Woo. Hey, you got any STTs?
They did.
Sexually transmitted technology.
Yeah. At the very beginning, you know, she did, you know, drop to him that, you know, she had an IUD. So I guess it was okay. But
just for that little terror, I believe is what they called it.
Yes.
There was a quite a bit of, I don't want to say colorful language, but
evocative.
Evocative, yes. I guess that's a good word for it.
Okay.
So don't listen to this book on the car stereo when you're sitting in front of your house waiting for the car to warm up.
Yeah.
With the windows down.
That's like your special power.
Yes. Especially with the, you know, the two kids next door.
So they said that her name, Hua's name, was based on a dessert. That it was the name of a dessert, right? A Korean dessert.
I believe that was okay. Stated in the book. Yes.
So yes, I guess Steve skipped that line, but
well, I mean, so Hua is diabetic, right? You know, and this was all sort of, you know, there were things that her mother just didn't do for her because she's mean.
Well, yeah, it seemed to be a thing where her mom was not the friendliest of people to her.
Yes. Madeline Ashby's themes seem to be terrifying mothers and terrifying things happening in schools.
Well, I guess that did happen in both of the books we've read.
Twice is just a coincidence. Three times is a pattern. We'll have to wait for the next book.
Yep. Well, I mean, they had the line where Hua's like, well, she thought that, you know, because her name was this dessert, you know, I guess out of some kind of edible flour or something. And so she's like, when I was a kid, I thought that it was, you know, this great, you know, I was like the sweet treat at the end of the day. And then like one time she asked her mom to like make, you know, get the dessert for her. And, you know, her mom like just kind of goes off on a tirade about, you know, why would I ever want to eat that? It has sugar and starches. And I, you know, I can't eat that. And like, you know, why would you even ask me to do that? You know, a very friendly motherly thing, you know, for your young child. So the weirdest thing was it seemed like she had never tasted it in her entire life, which I guess she was that traumatized or she didn't care at that point or something. Because later on she talked to Daniel.
She never had sweets because of her diabetes. I mean, she was basically all muscle and she never had any sweets.
Well, right. But I guess it was one of those like, you know, that's your name and you haven't at least, you know, had like a tiny little taste on the tip of your tongue just to see what it tastes like or something.
So I get the feeling that, you know, the mother named her that because just out of spite.
That could be.
You know, it's like, cause like she also had like this birthmark over one side of her face, which is sort of like a wine red. Body, like,
they kept on referring to it as the stain.
Yeah. And, you know, apparently it was something that they could have easily fixed with a little bit of, you know, bioengineered robots or something. I don't know.
That costs money.
Yeah, but they did it for her brother, right?
Come on, Barry, that costs money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that they had basically poured all the resources into the brother.
Yeah.
Right, they're like, he's the winning horse. And
But I thought so, you know, it was also really interesting later because it's like all the facial recognition software like just struggled with, you know, trying to recognize her. Like it would just sit there and like, you know, constantly try and focus and refocus and finally just give up.
Well,
like everybody around her who has all this technology like built into their eyeballs, it's like just like couldn't even see her, right?
Well, some of it too seemed like it was based on not so much recognition, but that it was like some of the stuff from the other books we've read where it's like, well, it's, I don't know if it was like just unpleasant to see ugly things. So it just sort of like removes that from your vision.
Right. So there was some of that. And yeah, she did seem to have called a dazzler pattern.
Yeah. So it's like I don't know if she was invisible or just sort of like, it would be like this, you know, blur that they wouldn't have to see her. And like, you know, they would Photoshop blur over her face so they wouldn't have to see something ugly.
I have seen pictures of people that just wear face makeup that is just sort of asymmetrical enough or so forth that facial, not just identification, but just software that just picks up this is a face doesn't work on them. And that was what I thought was going on there.
It could be, yeah. And that would make sense.
So what you're saying is that Kevin should like shave half of his beard off because that's like the common thing I've seen to defeat that sort of thing.
Oh,
I think he should do that, but that's just because his beard should be half constructed.
I agree. My beard is half constructed. And, you know, I thought about being a policeman one time. Like,
This has been some Apple II jokes, ladies and gentlemen.
It's not an Apple II specifically. But you know. Yes. And but then later on, so Daniel's like, oh, this, you know, this dessert that, you know, is your name, like it's like this awesome dessert, and I, you know, it's one of my favorites or something. He's like, you should have it sometime. And but then at the end, she's, you know, I guess her stain is gone now, right? Because she got infected and her body got rebuilt.
Yeah. The technology basically fixed everything that was wrong with her.
Right. So she was kind of pissed at first, right?
Wouldn't we all be if everything was now perfect? Actually, no.
She's like, damn it. And, you know, it's sort of like, you know, this like, you know, who was it? Somebody was sort of saying, well, that was, you know, your identity isn't someone who's completely fucked up and like, you know, physically deformed. It's just, you know, that's not who makes you, you.
It is like how she defined herself for so long throughout the book and, you know, up to that point in her life, right?
Right.
She's like, I have like this, you know, birthmark. I have diabetes. All these other people around me are in perfect health. But yet, you know, I still, you know, kick people's asses on a regular basis. And that is sort of what, like, how she defined herself. So, I mean, I can kind of understand her anger at, you know, being, quote, fixed.
Oh, I thought it was perfectly consistent with the character, just not a particular fear that I share.
Right.
All right. So finally, usual questions. Was there tea?
Yep.
Yep. All kinds.
Yep. Herbal tea and actual tea. And of course, the best kind of tea.
Earl Grey.
It loses points for that, but still had got.
Well, you're right. It's definitely used in the context it normally is used in as a fancy kind of tea.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well. Fancy, Stephen. Not that, you know, mundane tea.
Oh, well, let's see.
Is your tea rage sparking?
It's not asleep.
Awake the sleeping giant.
The sleeper must awaken. All right. And then which character would you want to be and or which character would you be? Well, I think I would probably want to be Joel or Daniel. I mean, you know, either be super rich or just be mega perfect. As for who I am, I don't know. What do you guys think?
God,
who would you be?
No, I'm just saying I'm done moving on.
you could be the guy in the invisible suit.
That's it. No. They referred to a janitor on page 37.
Right. There were some random people in the background at the school or something. God, yeah, there was no way in this book that you're like, wow, I want to be that person. Like,
I want to be Joel.
Well, I guess Joel would be the closest one. Like, yeah, it's easy to be like perfect, you know, genetically perfect and super rich and like going to live forever, basically. So,
He does sort of get thrown into the deep end. It's just like, okay, now you're barely a teenager and now you're the young face of the company and you have to give a speech to all of these investors.
So let's jump really quick back. Was Joel's purpose to be, you know, sort of have, you know, the older guy's brain stuck into him or something? Or was he just, did he actually raising him to be sort of the next person by himself?
No, they were raising him to be the next person by himself. Daniel was supposed to have the old guy's brain stuck.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was really unclear about that.
I actually thought it was how Kevin interpreted it.
Oh.
Maybe I need to go back and, you know, listen to that whole.
Well, they did say that Daniel was a backup plan at one point.
Right. And the whole thing was save Daniel. And then she comes bursting into the room and kills Zachariah.
Well, okay. Zachariah wanted to put his brain into somebody. That much is clear. No one at this table comes to mind that I would like to stick my brain into. Thank you.
That could go so many wrong ways.
Open wide.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us all to invoke our personal backup plans, shall we say?
Yes.
Where's my lab on a chip?
I don't know. Until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi. All hail.